You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up after 7, it's Snap Judgment. Tonight's show is called Aces Wild. Snap throws down a four-of-a-kind in front of a full house live. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, the battle over the open Supreme Court seat could reach a breaking point this week if Democrats in the Senate continue to challenge Republicans over President Trump's nominee, Judge Neil Gorsuch.
Democrats in the Senate say they don't believe he was fairly nominated and that if he can't secure enough votes, that he should be replaced with another nominee. While Republicans have threatened to go nuclear if the Senate doesn't approve him.
Kimmy King joins us now to talk about the political fight over the Supreme Court. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas in Denton. Kimmy, welcome back.
Always good to be with Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, Kimmy, what is the latest as of this afternoon in the fight over nominee Neil Gorsuch?
So it looks like so far the Democrats have been able to hold together a coalition that can at least engage in a filibuster. And what that would do would be to potentially stop the confirmation in its tracks. And so we are going to see what happens tomorrow. This is like one great big giant reality show happening.
Have you ever seen anything like this before, Kimmy?
So you have seen this kind of acrimony before, back with the Clarence Thomas appointment, and there was much bitterness over his nomination to fill the Thurgood Marshall seat. You also have seen Harry Reid back in 2013 invoke the nuclear option, as we call it, when you use the Senate's rules requiring a supermajority to close off debate. You saw that with Reid being so tired of what he said were Republicans blocking Obama nominees to the lower courts and to cabinet-level positions, that they did invoke a rule change. And so that's where this fight is coming from.
Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is that in terms of this kind of level of partisanship and having reached this point, the delay of game for a Supreme Court nominee, the senators being so bitterly divided and going against what is typically considered a collegial deliberative body rules. No, we've never seen that before.
I was going to ask if in the past it was considered not necessarily prerogative. There may have been debate, but that if a president appointed a nominee, that there was the sense that this is a presidential prerogative to put forth a nominee. And unless there were some glaring red flag, that nominee would be confirmed.
That is true. There is this little known procedure called the blue slip, where the senator from the candidate's home state has the ability to block someone. But again, that was part of the Senate's collegial rule. So that was put out there that if you don't even have the support of the home team, then why should you be put forward? But in terms of what we're seeing here, there has just been this kind of use of, by any means, we'll call it by any means necessary to block a nominee.
How much of the Democratic resistance that we've seen in the Senate do you think you can put down to the refusal of Republicans when it was the end of President Obama's term to give a hearing to Judge Merrick Garland?
Wow, I really wish I had a machine to see into the hearts, minds, and souls of members of Congress to see what they are thinking. I will tell you what judicial scholars say about Gorsuch's record, and that is that he is not nearly the conservative that he has been portrayed to be. He has conservative values, but in terms of his opinions, there is plenty there for both sides to be pleased about. I think in a different time, Gorsuch would have had no trouble. We need to recall that there was no Democratic opposition when he was appointed to his initial federal judgeship. And I think that's critical. So if I have to give you my best professional guess, I'm going to say it's about a 65-35 split, that this is a function of the problems inside our government and the divided partisan nature that we've sort of all fallen into.
Well, you have maybe the rancor and the divided partisan nature. Is there also perhaps pressure from constituents who don't want to see maybe Democrats yield on this one?
Oh, absolutely. And there is great symbolic value in a Supreme Court nominee. Let's not forget that given the age of the justices right now, the next president is probably going to be able to make between 3 to 4 appointments, depending on how long they stay on. In terms of overall age, most of the justices now were appointed, in the age range of around their 50s. Now, Clarence Thomas, again, a very acrimonious debate, was one of the youngest at 43. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was among the oldest, being into her 60s. And so it's against that backdrop that you have to evaluate what it is that the senators are focusing on, because they're trying to put it into that tradition. And that's why everybody's jockeying for position. I saw a very interesting statistic that the 43 senators opposing Gorsuch comprise 53% of the population. And with the midterm elections in 2018, everyone is going to want to be able to say they supported the good side.
We're talking with Kimmy King right now from the University of North Texas in Denton, looking at the procedure moving forward for the confirmation or lack of confirmation of Judge Neil Gorsuch. And let's hear from one of the legislators himself now. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said that he couldn't in good conscience vote for Gorsuch. And here's what he said on the Senate floor.
After careful deliberation, I have concluded that I cannot support Judge Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court. His nomination will have a cloture vote. He will have to earn 60 votes for confirmation. My vote will be no, and I urge my colleagues to do the same. To my Republican friends who think that if Judge Gorsuch fails to reach 60 votes, we ought to change the rules, I say if this nominee cannot earn 60 votes, a bar met by each of President Obama's nominees and George Bush's last two nominees, the answer isn't to change the rules. It's to change the nominee.
And we have a quote, long quote there from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who's saying, in effect, let's not look at the nuclear option. Let's get a different nominee. But how likely is that to happen if you're on the Republican side of things and you want to see this nominee confirmed?
So this is going to be the $64,000 question, and how much of a divide, how much of a splintering can the Democrats possibly invoke? I think it's important to clarify that the reason for that, I mean, I think many people look at this issue of the filibuster, and it's a kind of strange rule that in essence says to close off debate, you have to have 60 members. It's a supermajority rule. But that to actually vote on something and to have it carry, you only need 51, a simple majority. And the idea behind the vote of cloture is that you want to try to have this kind of collegiality, that you need to have higher, you don't want to just barely meet the mark, you need to exceed the mark. And so that's what Schumer is pointing to. I think the concern that the Republicans should have is much of the same concern that they raised back when it was done in 2013, that it creates a dangerous precedent that then they will have to be held to. I think one of the things for your listeners that are keenly interested tomorrow is whether or not Pence will have to jump into it, because they have a 52-48 split right now. But if they can start to nibble away at even a majority vote, that's when it starts to get interesting and possible for changing the nominee, as Schumer is suggesting.
So what would Pence's role be?
So he has a tie-breaking vote as the presiding officer inside the Senate. And so it's when they come down to a 50-50 split that he is able to jump into the fray and break that split. And so that's why it's important and it matters.
Kimmy, what do you think is at stake for both Democrats and Republicans should the Republican side of this process decide to do as President Obama did with lower court nominees, to go for the nuclear option and to get rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees?
So the danger in that is that it is another nail in the coffin of the collegial measures that the Senate has always traditionally resorted to. remember that if you can't meet the 60-vote requirement, even one member of the Senate can just yap on for forever and it will eventually kill it. But the problem here is that it's so closely divided, and that if this precedent is created, then it's going to continue to be a war going forward, because as long as everyone keeps looking in the rearview mirror, they're not paying attention to the accident in the highway up ahead that they're going to have to navigate. And I think that's why you see scholars all over the place, both those that support Gorsuch and those that are opposed to him, saying that in some way it is the playing for rules here that is the real danger, because a Supreme Court nominee serves for life, and that's part of the concern.
We're talking with Kimmy King right now. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas in Denton. And we've been talking about the ongoing battle over Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the Democrats' attempt to stall the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch? Should he be confirmed? Or do you think the seat should have gone to Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll pick up our conversation in just a little bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're continuing our conversation about the political fight over the vacant Supreme Court seat and President Trump's nominee, Neil Gorsuch. Kimmy King stays with us. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas in Denton.
And you can join the conversation. What do you think about the politics involved in the Supreme Court? Should Neil Gorsuch be confirmed? Do you think that President Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, should have been confirmed last year? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post your comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Kimmy, I've got some callers for you, but first let's hear from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who doubled down on his support of Gorsuch and also his take on the Democrats over their stance. Here he is.
Judge Gorsuch, as you know, is extraordinarily well qualified. It's almost amusing to watch our Democratic friends try to come up with some rationale for opposition. Several have suggested that a Supreme Court justice needs to get 60 votes. In fact, I think you already know, no Supreme Court justice has ever been stopped with a partisan filibuster. There was one rather unusual exception, the Fordist nomination in 1968, ironically in the middle of a presidential election year, in which both sides collaborated to stop the nomination. So no Supreme Court justice has ever been stopped with a partisan filibuster. That is obviously what the Democratic leader has announced they will do. We are optimistic that they will not be successful in keeping this good man from joining the Supreme Court very soon.
And Kimmy, what do you hear in that quote from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell?
I think you hear the majority leader doing what any good majority leader for a party that is splintered is doing, and that is reminding everyone that if we are going to pick up the pieces and move this forward, then there needs to be a position that is to be taken. I think everyone is in universal agreement that should the process and the rules be changed, that it does set a precedent that will be of concern for future generations. And it also indicates a greater willingness to break the rules because of partisanship, or break what has historically been considered to be the rule. And maybe that's just the nature of our society, because we're changing. There are some who have said, hey, you know what, we can't all get along, and this is just power politics, and welcome to it, and we just have to get used to the new world and the new world order that we're facing.
We'll take a caller now. We've got Chris joining us first in Columbus. Chris, hi.
Hi, great show as usual.
Thank you.
I have to say that if you look at his credentials, Mr. Gorsuch's actual education credentials are almost identical, if not surpassing, Sonia Sotomayor's, and that confirmation hearing while some objections were raised, went through without, you know, real political opposition, and this should be no different. And the Democrats, and I call on Senator Baldwin, who, when she was part of the Wisconsin legislature, worked with people in forming consensuses, she needs to actually set forth some leadership in this and come together so that the rules are not changed.
Chris, thank you for that thought there. And Chris getting at, he wants to see there to be cooperation, that collegiality, Kimmy, that you were getting at earlier. Is he going to get it? Is this maybe a game of very, very high stakes chicken, and that both sides will maybe return to form?
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, where we go from here. I mean, the fact of the matter is we've increasingly been acrimonious about it. If you look back, you know, the Roberts appointment was a 78-22, but let's look at Samuel Alito. There was much, you know, grief over him. He passed 58-42, right? So you had enough to close off the cloture, and he was still able to be appointed. Most people consider Alito to be, you know, maybe to the right of Scalia in some ways in the approach that he has taken so far. Your caller's point is also very correct, that people looking over the Gorsuch credentials have highlighted that he has superior credentials, that this is a man who would have otherwise been accepted. And in fact, relative to some of the other Trump nominees that were being considered by the administration, Gorsuch doesn't have that hard-line conservative ideology that many Democrats have ranted about.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for that call. And we go next to Brian in Albany. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
I completely disagree with the last caller. Nobody is questioning Gorsuch's credentials. That's not the issue. It's whether she can get a vote, because the Republicans blocked Merrick Garland for 11 months. If they want to go with the nuclear option, get rid of the filibuster, that's great. That's fantastic. Let them screw themselves when they're in the minority. All they do is play these games. Over and over and over again. They like to sit here and threaten to go the nuclear option with the filibuster when they're in power, but when they're in the minority, they break all records.
Brian, thank you for your thoughts. And you hear, Brian, that pressure from voters that Democrats may feel that their voters want them to block this appointment, and some of them are rising to that challenge. But for Dems, you know, is there a price tag? For instance, the Democrats, or could Democrats, Kimmy, if the nuclear option goes through, could they lose the chance to block other appointments that could be even higher stakes further down the road?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons why you've seen some Democrats say that we just simply cannot reach that point, right? And that there will be payback on this. You know, the one caller had mentioned Sotomayor's record, and there was much fear at the time of Sotomayor because our now Attorney General Jeff Sessions absolutely criticized Sotomayor over comments that she had made and statements she had made about discrimination. And it mirrors in some way the acrimony that you've seen leveled at Gorsuch about his physician-assisted suicide writings, that it shows he's really pro-life and he's showing his real colors and all of that. So the problem, your second caller is again making a very valid point, that people are kind of tired of the messing with the rules to achieve your partisan purpose. And, you know, you can't complain about Harry Reid and what the senators did back in 2013 with getting rid of the filibuster. And then McConnell comes along and wants to do the same thing, but he now ups the ante and makes it for Supreme Court nominees, not just the federal district and lower court positions. So this is problematic. We got to figure out a way to start talking to each other and with each other and not past each other. And I think that's what many people feel is missing in this debate.
Let's take another call here. We've got Jim in Rice Lake with us. Jim, hi.
Hi. I'd like to comment. I think your guest is kind of either an advocate or an apologist for the Republicans. Pointing out, I'm an attorney, and she pointed out that there was no opposition to Gorsuch on a lower court level. She knows, or should know, that there's very little controversy usually in these appointments, because lower court judges follow the law. They don't make it. because I teach law. And as I tell my students, what the Constitution means is what 5 out of 9 people say it means on a Monday morning. And secondly, her comment that you can't look into the minds of the Democratic senators as to the obstructionist conduct of the Republican Party as a motivation to pay back the Merrick Garland unprecedented obstruction, I think is intellectually dishonest.
And Jim, I'm going to leave it there. I want to make sure Kimmy gets a chance to respond to all that. Kimmy,
and
go ahead.
It's a very fair point. I appreciate your point, absolutely. The reality is, though, that when you look at these things, lower court nominees do pass through, and perhaps it highlights the fact that there ought to be more of a vetting. And if there really is this concern, then why was this not raised back in 2013? And if we're going to continue to have obstructionism, should we have a conversation about how to go through a candidate's record more thoroughly at the lower court so that when they get to this high level, you're not doing this again? I certainly don't want to come across as an apologist for the Republican Party, but I think there's plenty of room here for blame to go around when people begin being critical of persons. One thing that's very fair.
And we're almost out of time,
yeah,
Kimmy. Just a few
one
seconds.
One last point I want to say, if you look at what Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor went through, I'm going to put a gender bend on this. If you look at the kind of the way in which they were raked over the coals in a number of ways, there are some people who've made the argument that Gorsuch didn't get as much of a beating up as he should have had compared to what they did to Kagan.
And we leave it there. Kimmy King, always a pleasure to have you on. Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas in Denton, joining us to talk about the political fight over the Supreme Court.